And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of July 15th, 2019. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. So, dear listener, you may remember that in a recent show, we discussed what it might mean for a climate policy debate to be held among this year's presidential candidates. You can go back and listen to that show. It's up online. But in this show, what we wanted to do was to get into a little more detail about the kinds of questions that should be asked. And what are the mechanics of a debate? I mean, it's not funny. You know, debate's an overused word in these circumstances, right? Because nobody's really debating. You get everybody up on stage and they're being asked questions. It's sort of this massive joint interview among all the presidential candidates. But if there were a two-hour period dedicated to discussing climate change and climate policy, what kinds of questions should be asked in order to produce the most useful benefit for the people of the United States? Right, Mariah, is that a fair question?
Yeah, absolutely. What do the people of the United States want to know, and what'll keep them tuning in?
That's right. So we'll refer again to the an article from Dave Roberts in Vox, and another article from Umer Irfan, also at Vox. They seem to be leading the charge. In the Roberts article, he basically makes the point that what we want to do in this kind of setting is to focus on what the president, whoever she is, can actually do and will do with the powers of the presidency. And he has another overarching idea that we don't want to get into a climate science debate. That debate's closed. What we want to do is focus on policy, right? Is that a fair
and just
reading?
As an aside, yeah. Yes, absolutely. But just as an aside, I do love that Roberts, in that article, always referred to the president as she. I thought that was a nice touch.
We'll take turns. We'll go back and forth. Mariah, do you want to take the first one, or do you want me to take the first question here?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, so I'll say, as we said in our last show, if I was a presidential candidate, maybe one day.
You should be.
If I was, and I was in a climate change debate, I think I would craft a rhetoric around a vision of the future and all of the opportunities and all of the hopeful pieces that a renewable energy transition brings for us. So, you know, I think that would be the big thing, that I would go in with that sort of vision prepared. Mm-hmm. But then some of the questions that I would hope to see asked, Dave Roberts gave a really excellent list. And, you know, we can talk about some of them that are probably really important, but not as exciting to me, like the filibuster and, you know, different things like that. But I did, the question that he posed that I think would be the most important to me is, what will you do to ensure that vulnerable communities are protected mm-hmm. during the transition to clean energy? And I think that that's very fundamental to this effort. And I want to know that the candidate who would be representing the Democratic Party was very thoughtful about this and had put a lot of time into thinking about this and how to make sure that it was a just transition. Many of the environmental movements have suffered most. I wrote a lot about this in my book, Protecting the Planet. The environmental movement has suffered frequently from not including all populations, specifically marginalized populations, and has sort of, it in some ways, painted itself to be this thing that people who have time for environmental issues can care about. You know, those who are driving their Prius, they have enough money to buy a Prius, and they're doing their yoga and
organic and self-sustainable
and
way,
eat
right?
All organic food, right? And really, many of the issues from really the repercussions from not taking care of our resources and not thinking holistically about the natural system, those effects often fall disproportionately on people, you know, lower income families and people who are more marginalized. They end up suffering the worst from these sorts of environmental impacts. And so not including their voice and not including them in the thought process of the transition would be a fundamental flaw in any climate policy. And so I find that to be one of the most interesting and important questions to ask in the debate.
I would agree. I mean, the just transition, I think it's on two fronts that, so this is the environmental justice, just transition part. There's two fronts. One is that it's the morally right thing to do, right? I mean, there are articles you can find online talking about the original New Deal as almost explicitly excluding a black population, right? The redlining of houses so that people couldn't get the loans, and so now you've denied generations of people of color the
Yeah,
benefit of
it
owning a
stratifies the
home, right?
economy. Yeah.
But then, so there's this morally correct thing, ethically correct, I guess. And the other side is that if you want to build a broad coalition that is sustainable over the course of 100 years, you need to have everyone involved. Everyone needs to be bought in. You can't have some people say, "Oh, I don't care about that because it didn't benefit me." So, I mean, politically, it's smart to have as wide a spectrum of people in your coalition as possible. So, I think that question, yeah, and I think Robert says, you know, this is a threshold issue. Every president, and it's what you said, right? I mean, the presidential candidate must have a position and must understand it and must demonstrate an understanding that this is a requirement of a solution.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that I think the other question that, well, let me come back to the one you hate, and let me just, and in fact,
I didn't
Robert
say I
says
hated
you didn't
it.
hate it, but
I just find it less compelling than some
well,
of the others, even though it's important.
even Roberts in his posing of the question says that people are annoyed by the question, and technically it's not a climate question, but it's one you have to come to terms with, and that is the fairly realistic possibility that the U.S. Senate will remain in the grimy, oil-soaked hands of Mitch McConnell, right? And how are you going to deal with, do you support getting rid of the filibuster so that you can introduce legislation? Right, so this is now sort of inside baseball because most people don't know or care about what the filibuster is. But I guess I would pose, I mean, that question could be broadened out a little bit. And the way I was posing it was, in the sense the filibuster is a subset of the question of how does this person, as a presidential candidate, engender the broad coalition so that everybody in Iowa is calling up, everyone in Kentucky is calling Mitch McConnell and telling him that they want this legislation. How do you get the people involved in a continuing way to overcome the roadblocks that are in the Congress, right? I mean, I think that's a question that these people have to respond to. I mean, how are we going to deal with reality? Because there's two sides. I mean, one of the other questions that that Roberts asked is, what are you going to do via executive order, right, without Congress, right? And how are you going to try and get Congress on board? I mean, those are two sides of the same coin, and I think it's fair. It may be people probably don't want to hear much about it, but the whole question of how you're going to realistically get around Congress and get something done is one that's pragmatic and has to be, I think, has to be dealt with. No?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, just to add a point of clarification, are you saying that you would like to see sort of constituents putting the pressure onto Mitch McConnell to not filibuster this stuff, and you think that would be the solution to the problem, or do you think that we should reform or scrap the filibuster?
Well, I guess the what I want to see
If
is,
you were president,
if I was
a
president, I mean, I would much rather
presidential
have people
candidate.
calling up, having con you know, change as little as you can. So in that sense, I'm conservative, right? You don't want to change. The government has been the way it is. Don't change it if you don't have to. But if you, in order to avoid changing the filibuster, you need enormous public grassroots pressure pushing these recalcitrant politicians, right? So if that's, I'm not sure as president that that's a hard thing to do, right? Some of the candidates have said they're building a movement, right? And essentially that's what we need. It's not, I promise you, bread and circuses if you elect me president, right? It's like, how are we going to build a sustainable political will to take action? My fear is that that's very hard to do. And so then you say, okay, you need to get rid of the filibuster. If you go into the filibuster, it looks as if it's a was designed for segregationists to maintain state power, right? And you can get all dewy-eyed about the history of the filibuster as a great American institution, but it's just being abused now in many ways by both sides.
But definitely by both sides, yeah.
Yeah. And so is this the way to run a railroad? I don't know. I mean, it's an open question. It's one that's to think about. But man.
Yeah. Well, that's a tough question. I mean, I know I've heard that I think Elizabeth Warren was one of the first candidates I heard to come out saying strongly, let's get rid of the filibuster. Mm-hmm. And I assume there's probably different candidates who have stance on this. But what Roberts pointed out is that Pete Buttigieg says that the system's so structurally stacked against progressives that we really do have to prioritize the structural reform if we want to get any sort of climate. Well, Buttigieg doesn't see this, although maybe he did. But if we want to get any sort of climate policy pushed through, that structural reform is tantamount to allowing space for climate policy to happen in the face of political opposition. So, yeah, I mean, I guess there's two prongs. Either we sort of break apart the political opposition, which we've been trying to do for a long time. Or we reform the system so that it's more conducive to getting climate policy to move through.
Right. And in fact, there probably a lot of other progressive policy, right? So it's climate then becomes one of, okay, so put the ugly filibuster question aside. I guess the other thing that I was intrigued by from the Roberts list was to ask the candidates what their vision of the Green New Deal is. And he explicitly points out that there is no policy under the Green New Deal right now, so it's an empty vessel to be filled up with the happy talk of the candidates. But depending on what they say, kind of put them on the spot. And I think this comes back to your original idea of what's the vision for the future, right? This is where the candidates could put in all of the good things that the Green New Deal and a clean transition would give us. Isn't that fair?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that he was concerned that that question could be easily abused to create that meme, that it could be something where the substance of the question gets eroded under the auspices of something fun to put onto the internet, right? Like, show of hands, how many of you want the Green New Deal? And now, of course, the problem with a question like that is that it is so polarized politically right now. Mm-hmm. Notably in this list that Roberts presents, he has it organized based on priority, and he puts that one in at six out of ten, I think.
Right.
Six out of nine, maybe. And I wonder if that's in part because there is a lot of polarization around it.
I would like to do, Mariah. I'm going to sort of read the questions, since we obviously aren't going to get through all 10 of them. Each one is a 20-minute discussion. I'll read the questions so that people can have heard them, and it stimulates thought. And then we'll come back and have a discussion about who should be asking questions, right? Who do we want on the other side of the table asking these kinds of questions? And I think that's an interesting thought experiment. So let's see. My summary of the Roberts and Irfan questions are this. See, number one was, where does climate change fall on your list of priorities to the presidential candidates? Second one was, will you advocate for scrapping the filibuster? Another question is, what executive actions are you prepared to take to reduce carbon emissions? Mariah, your favorite question is the fourth one. What will you do to ensure vulnerable communities are protected? He says, what role do you see carbon price playing? How do you view the Green New Deal? That's the sixth. The seventh question is, and this is an interesting one, will you pursue Republican votes, or will you try to just overwhelm them with Democrats? An interesting one that we can't get to is, do you support efforts to hold the fossil fuel companies accountable? Right, that's a two-hour discussion in and of itself.
Yeah, we've had that two-hour discussion on this show.
I mean, he asked basically, let's get past wind and solar and batteries, what else can we do to reduce carbon emissions? And I think there you can think about things like cement manufacture, which is something like 15% of total emissions, but is like really hard to get at. And finally, he goes, another big enchilada question that no one can get to is, you know, how are we going to help the military prepare for a chaotic world? What kind of foreign policy? Again, these are enormous questions that are not easily, I mean, you can just imagine the context of having 20 people having 2 minutes each to answer a question about the fate of American foreign policy.
Like, yeah,
wow.
The threat multiplier of climate change, yeah.
And Umer Irfan asked the following kinds of questions. We didn't get a chance to discuss these, but they're all great. I mean, she says, who is liable for climate change, right? Basically, how much responsibility should the United States take for its historical responsibility for creating the problem in the first place, right? She wants to know, does natural gas have a future in the United States? I mean, we've all talked about methane and fugitive emissions, blah, blah, blah. She wants to know, at what point do we stop rebuilding things that are damaged by climate change events, right? What point do we just start adapting to in giving up territory along the coast to, I mean, as you know, even as we speak, there's a hurricane headed for New Orleans, which is already flooded, already in deep trouble, right? At what point do you give up New Orleans? She asks, you know, if...
He. I'm just a small clarification.
It's a he. Oh, my. Okay. There you go. My apologies.
No.
Finally, there's two other questions. You know, given the fact that renewable energy costs are dropping, can we just leave climate change to the marketplace to solve itself? And he also asked, what would you do to bring the conservative side on board with a climate policy? So, I mean, that's a list of questions that are quite interesting. And I hope, dear listener, you're sitting, you printed them all out as we watch this climate policy debate unfold sometime in the future. All right. So, all right, Mariah, let me put you on the spot. Climate debate opens up. They have that stirring music. Dun da da da, dun da 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 da. Climate debate. 20 candidates up there looking out. Who's asking the questions?
You are, Ted.
That's the right answer.
Let's get you up.
Me
there.
And you, we're going to do it together. Okay, yeah, beyond that.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, you know, certainly Rachel Maddow has covered this topic well, but she's already been a moderator, as we know, and, you know, didn't necessarily use
cover
a lot of
herself
her.
In glory. Yeah. Well, I saw a tweet from this guy, Ezra Klein, who runs Vox, where Dave Roberts works. So it's a little bit self-serving, but he said that Dave Roberts should, our favorite guy here, should moderate the debate. And that got me thinking, so if I were to have my hand-picked cast of characters, I would go looking for people who are politically savvy and who know the climate issue. So my proposal would be to have either Michael Mann or Catherine Hayhoe asking questions, right? Or have Bill McKibben asking these questions, or have someone like Mary Anais Hegler asking these questions, or get this, I think this would be a great one, bring back Al Gore. He could descend from heaven on a cloud to the stage.
I don't know.
Ask questions.
You also have, I know you put on your list Coral Davenport, and I love her. I think she would also be great. I mean, the one thing I would say is that sometimes you have, I have seen people who are, excellent in print. Their writing is just compelling and fantastic, but that's a very different skill than being a moderator and being on television. And so you're going to run into some obstacles with that, right? Or some of the people that you just mentioned, Catherine Hayhoe she might be fantastic actually at it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe Michael Mann, some of these are really robust scientists. But again, it's a very different skill. So they're going to know the science really, really well. But, you know, can they also have the pivot to ask questions and, you know, have all the telegen, not the telegenicity, but the sort of the body language and the things that you need to keep the debate moving, and that moderating skill is a really tough one to have. And I think that's the challenge we face, is who knows the climate science well and can moderate and has that skill to moderate.
So here's my comeback. Here's what I'm thinking. We have, on the asking side, we get two telegenic, quick on their feet journalists, right? And they work with Mann and McKibben and Heglar, who are all sitting behind them, whispering questions in their ear or how to press forward, and sort of have almost like congressional hearings where you have counsel there that you lean over and listen to what they what they tell you.
Yeah.
And you can, so, I mean, if you really want to have a good debate, it can't be, as you said, you know, a big search for clickbait, right? It's got to be a thoughtful debate that gets to the... All right. Well, look,
That's not a bad idea. I mean, I like that thought of, because the follow-up questions are the ones that are important, but they're also very difficult if you are not very well versed in the science. And so having a council might be the way to go.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to put yours and my name in for as the moderators for the climate debate. I'll send an email, see who listens. Anyway, we should put it down there. Let me tell everybody, we will put up links to things we talked about, these two particular articles of great questions. That'll be at the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find this show on our Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can send us your nomination for moderator of the climate policy debate to podcast@massclimateaction.net. We'd love to hear from you. You can listen to this show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, et cetera, SoundCloud, Podbean, nowadays even Spotify. We want to thank D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. It's always a help. We'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, please get ready for the debate.
All right, I'll start brushing up on my moderating skills.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.